Jeff Epps is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida.
This Nugget's pink, and I hate it.
About to go hard for 50 minutes.
You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, November 9th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Barry, and joining me today, two football writers who lack big play potential. We got Bobby Colovi.
I'm just hoping the show isn't becoming as predictable as the Gators offense.
And Kyle Maestri.
I'll try not to be the David Nelson of this podcast.
David Nelson is a saint, all right?
You mean the offensive player of the game?
Yeah, one of you will make a great point, and then it'll just fall into my lap somehow, and I'll just take credit for it.
Yeah, that's what we do around here. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. We're going to recap the Florida Vanderbilt game really quick, but the big deal with this show is it's the Florida basketball season preview podcast. Get excited for that.
Woo!
We're going to cover more Florida basketball than you've ever cared to hear about, but we're going to make it interesting. I swear, that's what we do here. Let's start off with the Florida Vanderbilt talk, though. Like I oh so wittily said in the intro, Florida's offense lacking big plays, Bob. What do you got to say about the offense?
Yeah, they tricked us last week against Georgia. Exactly. They came out, they looked explosive, they looked creative at times, and everyone thought, they're back. You know, this is the same offense from 2008. Well, against Vanderbilt on Saturday, not the case. Went back to being that the offense that can move the ball at times, but couldn't do anything to finish off drives. Yeah. But the defense is always there to bail them out. They had three big plays, and Urban Meyer said this morning on his press conference, besides the 125-yard run by Jeff Demps, the longest run other than that was 12 yards.
Wow.
So they're not even getting close to big plays. Yeah. They had the one long pass play to Aaron Hernandez late in the game, which to me kind of seemed like a desperate attempt. Like, we need a big play. We're just going to force it right now. Because on the play before that, they also tried to go deep, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, basically, the reason for this, we're being told, is that other defenses are doing a good job of knowing their scheme and tendencies, which is the defense's job. You know, they prepare all week to know the opposing offense's scheme, their tendencies, what they plan to do on third and two, which everyone knows for the Gators is going to be run Tebow.
Yeah.
The fact that they're using this as an excuse of why why defense hasn't been able to stop them is awful.
Yeah.
The coaches' jobs are Steve Adazio, Billy Gonzalez, and Scott Leffler. I guess those are three of the guys like most responsible for the game plan and play calling. Their job is to make sure that even if when these defenses come out, game plan to stop your tendency, that you have something to counteract that.
Yeah.
Either something that's going to stop whatever they're going to do or break away from your tendencies. They're not doing that anymore. They've given up. They're now using the excuse that, well, the defense is so good, there's no reason to push anything to, you know, try to score a lot. We're just going to take what we're given, you know, run our offense, be patient, and let the defense do their job.
That's kind of what I thought the beauty of the Jeff Demps run was, is everybody expected Tebow up the middle there, a Tebow run. But then you do the option pitch out to Demps, and it's like, that was unexpected.
The exact definition of breaking away from your tendency is that, I mean, there was no one from Vanderbilt on the outside. No one. Once they got to that corner, it was gone. It was over. Like, they had no chance of having anyone to stop that play. Which, I'm not saying you have to change everything you do, but you need to break your tendency so that there's the least possibility that they can't put 11 men in the box to stop Tebow.
Yeah.
They're going to have to be worried about one or two other things, and teams don't have to worry about that because they know what's coming. They're using the excuse, the defense is so good, we're just going to be patient, we're going to run our offense. The defense was good last year. The defense was great last year.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't doing this. To me, that shows that there's something wrong this season. They're not able to move the ball like they want to. They're not able to put the ball in the end zone like obviously they would like. And they're just kind of using this excuse that the defense is so good and we're gonna play the game for them instead of it being we're just gonna put up points and once the game's safe, that's when we're gonna bring it back.
The defense is scary good though. This is what, the fifth of nine games where they haven't given up an offensive touchdown? That's unbelievable to me.
And I wanna say, I don't know when the Charleston Southern touchdown came in, but I mean that may not
have been against the starters.
Yeah, that doesn't really count.
Mm. So, I mean, they did this all without Brandon Spikes as well. Ryan Stanford, Dustin Doe both stepped up, had pretty big games.
Ryan Stanford coming to the season, I was a fan of. I thought he was good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not good. He's great. He's absolutely great. For him to, like, step into for Brandon Spikes' role and have no problem, and I think he brings something that Spikes doesn't.
Would you say he's a swamp stud?
He's a swamp stud, and it my goal the rest of the season is to make sure he wins the overall swamp stud of the season instead of Tebow. I'm going
to
make a strong push for it. And if Kyle's with me here, we can make it happen.
Well, it's collusion. Bobby's acting as though he's making this grand push for Stamper. You left him off your swamp studs this week until we had to go back and tell you to change it.
Oh, no.
In place of Tebow, no less.
No, it wasn't Tebow. It was Demps.
You're right. It was Demps.
I thought it was Tebow,
which is more forgivable. Jeff Demps is the best player ever played in Florida, so
I mean,
it's okay.
You've heard that before, yeah.
But the thing I really feel as though Stamper, he knows the defense so well. He can position players. Yeah, he can position the other players on the defense to help the team be, you know, obviously better prepared for what's about to come. Yeah. He seems to have a good understanding of what offense is about to do. He knows their tendencies and their scheme. That's what he does really well.
As defenses are wont to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been fantastic. He plays his role great when he has to, and then when he has to step up for Brandon Spikes, he does. Dustin Doe filled in at Stamper's position, led the team with tackles. So it just shows you how talented they are that even the people who don't start could be stars on the team.
Yeah, that's Doe starting for Spikes in that position. Like, he moved to Spikes' position?
He's started in Stamper's position. Stamper moved to middle linebacker where Spikes starts.
Okay,
so, yeah.
That just shows how deep the linebackers are to me. If you can just move in guys, one of those guys won't start next week, and, you know, clearly, like, they're capable of being one of the better players on one of
Brandon
the best
Hicks,
defenses in the nation.
Brandon Hicks was out with an injury, but he is also a backup that could easily start on most teams in the nation.
Yeah. All right, well, anything else about the Vanderbilt game before we move on here to the meat of the show?
No, it was a bad
Chaz game. Henry let up his first punt return.
Yeah,
season.
I noticed that.
He's out-kicking the
We coach. Buried the lead here.
Yeah, clearly that's the most important thing from this game.
Yeah.
Chaz Henry, though, NFL leg, that guy.
He should be an NFL punter. Absolutely. At the very least, a UFL punter.
Oh, he'll be a UFL punter. Tuskers are desperate need. But before we move on to basketball, I want to revisit some of the stuff we talked about on Thursday or Friday's show, which was featuring the outrageous Phil Kegler, our score predictions, and Gator guarantees. Our score predictions were a little bit off in terms of what we thought Florida would do. I said 41-6. Bob, you nailed Vanderbilt. You said 44-3. And Phil, that guy, said 59-10. Once again, not a great week for us. I think we all expected Florida's offense to be a little better than they were.
He probably should have piggybacked off our scores.
I mean, he piggybacks off of everything else, so piggybacking off our scores would have done him some favors. But speaking of piggybacking, Gator guarantees, I was right. You guys can soak in my glory here. I was 100% correct.
I still make the argument it doesn't count. Tim Tebow did not want David Nelson catch that touchdown pass. He seemed visibly upset that David Nelson caught it. Not really, but I like the picture in my head that
really.
He was yelling at David Nelson after that he's not supposed to catch touchdowns.
Well, let's revisit this, though. My Gator guarantee, not that Tebow would be happy about it, but simply that David Nelson would score a touchdown against Vanderbilt. I was correct.
That's a fair point by Adam. He didn't project Tim Tebow's move.
No, I had nothing about emotions in there, just raw production. Bobby, you said Caleb Sturgis would kick a 50-plus yard field goal. Almost.
I'm going to defend myself again on this one.
Of course you are.
It was
good
45
luck.
Yards, but that kick...
Oh, it would have been good from 50.
It would have been good from, like, 80. I don't know what... He needs to calm himself down a little bit. He put so much force behind each kick. It's like he's trying to break the ball.
Would have been good from 80?
80. Probably not. I'll put it at
Marcus 60. Russell of kickers.
Yeah, absolutely. He could have kicked that 80 yards on his knee.
What was it Meyer said after the game about where he trusts Sturgis' range from?
57.
Yeah. He rounded up to 60 somehow. I mean, 57, so 60.
I could see him hitting a 60 yarder, but it'd have to be at a time where either A, it's at the end of the game where they need a game winning field goal, or it's like right before halftime.
You just
there's like 2 seconds
the board,
left.
Yeah.
There's no way the other team can benefit from you giving them good field position. But I think he's got the leg to do
it. Let's be honest. The only reason Caleb Sturgis is doing so good is because Chaz Henry's holding for him.
Oh, yeah.
He just gets a perfect hold every single time.
I mean, he's you know, being held by an NFL leg. Yeah. Like, he has to live up to that. I don't know. Phil's guarantee as well, once again, wildly incorrect because it's Phil. He said that Florida would rush for more than 300 yards in the game.
They didn't hit 200.
They didn't even hit 200. Nice job on that one, Phil. Hey,
also, the Brendan James piggybacking touch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even know if I let him actually finish that one because I started yelling at him.
It was Brendan James
would score
a
return touchdown, which he did not. Also, Warren Norman. Stormin' Warren Norman did not break one as I expected.
I refer to him in my blog as Stormin' Warren Norman.
Nicely done. I appreciate that. All right, well, with that out of the way, let's move on here. Let's talk about Florida basketball.
Thank God.
Yeah, this is what everybody's been waiting for, I think.
Yeah.
You know, since football season started, when are we going to start the basketball talk on the podcast? Right now.
We started with football on purpose to trick you guys into listening to football, and I hit you with the basketball.
Everybody's hitting stop right now. They're going to listen to another podcast right now. But big year for Florida basketball. It's sort of a new team, as I've argued before on this podcast. You know, everything's a little different. Some new players that are going to play some big roles. And just in general, there's sort of a new outlook. I don't know what you guys have felt about this so far, but what do you guys think of some of the new players starting off here? Vernon Macklin, Kenny Boynton.
Kenny Boynton's better than I thought I can say with certainty after seeing him play one game against St. Leo.
Yeah.
And with equal certainty, Vernon Macklin's worse than I thought. And Eric Murphy's better than I thought. So, I mean, those are going to be the three main new guys.
Yeah. What about Hot Rod?
I mean, Hot Rod's, he's cute, but he's not going to play a meaningful role. He'll just be he'll be a nice bench player, come in, eat 10 minutes a game, yeah. You know, just kind of run the offense, don't do anything to hurt him,
yeah.
Give the guard some rest. But I think Eric Murphy could surprise some people. He's a lot bigger than I thought when I saw him in person, like as far as he weighs more, he's well put together, he can bang down low. And Boynton just looks like a lights-out scorer. Yeah, he's a better shooter than I thought. I thought Boynton was going to be more of a slasher, a Tyreek Evans type, but he's a much better shooter. And Macklin looks real soft, though, and he couldn't get any rebounds against a team of very small players.
I believe I said severely undersized
yeah,
team.
So we'll see how those trends play out. But those are my first impressions of the guys.
Bob,
Eric
anything?
Murphy is well put together. I mean, I agreed with Kenny Boynton, more of a shooter than I thought. I thought he'd be... He would drive a lot more.
I think he can be, and I think he will be as well.
He impressed me with his shooting, though. He was great.
Yeah. There's no knock on him.
No, absolutely not. Some of the other things, though, just sort of general stuff. I've talked a lot about the different attitude on this team, and I think it's something that starts from the top down. You look at Billy Donovan before the season with his staff scheduling a much tougher out-of-conference, non-conference schedule than you know they have in years past. There's no Florida FIUs or whatever this year that's you know going to be the bulk of the schedule out-of-conference. You got teams like... You know, obviously Syracuse, you got Michigan State,
possibly
UMass or Rutgers. That's a
Rutgers
big game for Bob.
Rutgers is a tough team this year.
Yeah.
Get ready for it. Mike Rosario.
So everything's a little bit tougher. He's sort of not easing his team so much into the schedule this year as he has in years past. It's more about, you know, creating a tougher team, you know, not letting them, you know, get all a sense of entitlement, which I think has been an issue the last couple of years, where the team gets sort of a big head and just sort of rolls into the SEC thinking they're awesome, when in reality they're clearly not, as they've shown in the last couple of years.
They've got quite a few jokes on the schedule, but
they
did also schedule some teams that are fringe tournament teams, even for smaller schools. So when you get schools like South Alabama and Richmond and American those are all teams that you know sneak into the tournament every once in a while. I think two out of those three were in the tournament last year. I don't think Richmond was, but they were decent. South Alabama and American, I think both were.
Yeah, American.
So, I mean, at least you get, like, some decent competition, some people you'll see in the postseason. And they definitely went top-heavy and finally scheduled some big teams.
Xavier, down
in the middle of the conference schedule, which is going to be interesting.
I think the big thing about those games is those are fringe teams that are good enough to pull an upset if you don't show up.
Exactly.
Right,
so that means the
games
are going to have to show up for these games, or they will lose those teams.
It forces them to stay consistent, and it'll make them sort of learn more about their team. They'll establish sort of who they are early on instead of having, you know, figured out on the fly in SEC season where they would have been good enough in the last couple years to get by the non-conference slate, sort of just on talent, I think, you know, not having to do a whole lot of extra work or preparation there like they would against like a Weber International or a St. Leo.
Right.
They don't even watch film.
And the SEC is a lot better this year. All signs point to the SEC being a lot better. So it's important that they get into some kind of rhythm before that and they test themselves a little bit before that, because the SEC schedule is not easy.
Yeah, but again, it's something, you know, this whole new attitude I'm talking about that came from Billy Donovan to sort of his veteran players, or what, you know, few veterans there are on this team, the Dan Werners of the world, Dan Werners and Chandler Parsons. They've talked, you know, they came into this year in better shape than they have, you know, in their entire careers here. And that's easy to say, but when they focus on it this much, I have a tendency to believe them. And it's something they realized last year. I forgot how many of their games it was, but they lost a bunch of their games by 6 points or fewer. And I want to say six games by 4 points or fewer. They lost a lot of games close. They lost a lot of games down the stretch where they simply just couldn't keep up with the other teams because they weren't deep, they weren't in shape. And this year, that seems to have changed. And that's also been aided by the fact that some of these new guys that we just talked about are good enough to come in and threaten them for their jobs. Like, you know, Dan Werner should feel threatened by Eric Murphy. Alex Tyus, you know, not threatened by, but, you know, he could lose minutes there to an Eric Murphy type. So I think that helps push those guys a little bit harder. And it just, I don't know, there's a different atmosphere. They can finally practice 5-on-5 in scrimmages, which has got to be good for them in terms of, you know, encouraging competition and everything.
Yeah, definitely a deeper team. So as far as that's concerned, why don't you kind of hit us with what the starting lineup, you expect the starting lineup to look like?
Yeah, I'm going to say, and this is, you know, pretty safe bet, Irving Walker, a point guard, Kenny Boynton, shooting guard. We'll skip small forward, come back to that in a second.
As usual.
Yeah, Alex Tyus at power forward, and Vernon Macklin at center, the new transfer who sat out all last year. Small forward, he's going to start Dan Werner at first. He should not start Dan Werner at first. Chandler Parsons should be the starting small forward on this team, I'm of the belief, you know, at least. But he's going to start Dan Werner. Parsons, if, you know, what's been said or what's happened in the one exhibition game so far is any indication, Parsons is going to come in quick. Parsons is going to play like a starter. So that's your starting five. But then you have a half-decent, backup group. We got Hot Rod Tishman as your backup point guard.
Tish, as I heard him referred to by
that. That's what the reporters call him. That's
what?
Like, yeah, and then some of the players call him that, obviously.
Oh, God.
And then Ray Shipman, probably backup shooting guard type. Chandler Parsons, backup small forward. Eric Murphy, and then Kenny Cagey is sort of your backup big men. That's not a bad 10.
No, I don't think that's a bad 10 at all. I think they have some talent off the bench, finally, and some guys that can come in and give you productive minutes instead of just spelling your starters. So
the only one I'd be concerned about a little bit in that front court is Kenny Cagey. Like, you know how I've said they talk about how they're all in the best shape of their lives. Donovan just praises his players endlessly about that. Whenever somebody brings up Kenny Cagey, it's always, well, you know, Kenny, if he can get in better shape a little bit, you know, keep up with some of the things we're doing here, then he'll be all right. I think he is a little bit of a cause for concern, which could hurt Macklin. But again, you can slide Tyus over to the center if need be, Werner at power forward. They're deep enough and versatile enough where I think they'll be all right should Kenny Cagey continue to be a little disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, Cagey just looks soft. Like, not soft as a player, because when he got on the court,
yeah,
he actually did some things that I thought were pretty good.
Yeah.
But he still, like, he just looks soft body-wise.
He looks lost to me.
He does. I mean, at times he looks lost, and then, like, he had 3 block shots in just in few minutes. I mean, I know it's a bad team,
yeah,
but, you know, Vernon Macklin didn't block a shot.
No,
so,
that's true.
You know, he's doing something right, and he had 2 of his blocks were very nice, well-timed blocks.
Yeah, one fell into his hands. But
was just lobbed up to him to just spike away. But, I mean, I thought he did some good things, but he still just doesn't look in shape.
No, he looks a little lost offensively. I think, once again, a ball, like, went right through his legs against St. Leo.
Yeah.
He's just a little bit lost out there. I don't think he's going to have to play a lot of minutes or a decent number of minutes.
I just don't understand how, if so much stress was put on conditioning this offseason to get in shape, how does one guy come back and not be in shape? One guy who was there last year. Is he just not going through stuff?
He won so many awards in the offseason. He hit the buffet circuit, the banquet circuit. he couldn't keep it in check. It was a Troy Smith scenario.
Yeah, Kenny Cagey was all over the awards circuit in the offseason.
But I like Kenny Cagey, and I defend
like
him
said.
More than should be, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I just think he's super unpolished. He hasn't been playing basketball that long. And he's got the physical tools you want. He does some things well that you like to see out of your big men. He blocks shots, and, you know, he's shown that he can dunk the ball, though I'd like to see him dunk the ball more. Mm. But I just think he's a good inside presence, and I think he's much more of an inside presence than Vernon Macklin. And I could be proven wrong over the course of the year, but I just think that Vern doesn't look too good inside right now. I'm concerned about Vernon Macklin.
Yeah, and you probably should be. To Vern's defense, I guess, I don't know. He said he was just nervous in that first game back, which, you know, and this is probably something that could last for a couple games in. He hasn't played a game of organized like basketball on a professional level in a year and a half,
or two years. If we went out and we played a game against middle schoolers in front of a crowd of 10,000 people, and it was the first time we were getting a chance for the audience to see us, we'd all be nervous, yeah. Okay? But we'd still just dunk all over them, get out and run, dominate. They probably wouldn't get any rebounds over us with a substantial height difference.
Bob and I would get bust out, yeah.
I mean, I'd be the Irv of the team, obviously.
Right. But that's what happened with Vern. Like, it's like you're playing a group of scrubs. You got somebody boxing you out who's 4 or 5 inches shorter than you and substantially less athletic. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm alarmed. He didn't have to go off and score 15 points. I don't care about that because that's not what the team needs him to do.
Yeah.
He needs to block shots and rebound, and he proved to do neither in this game, and that's really concerning to me. And he played like 25 minutes, so he had enough time out there where he should have been you know, doing a lot more than he did. But he can still turn around. It's early. I'm not shutting him down for the whole year. I'm just saying I'm very concerned at this point.
Donovan has lowered the expectations on Macklin several times, talking about he doesn't, you know, he's not going to be a savior, which was unfair to expect of him in the first place.
Right.
That's Kenny Boynton.
Right.
But, you know, he's not going to be that guy. He's not going to come out and score 20 points no matter what Chandler Parsons says he's going to do. You know, he's going to come out there. All Billy asks him to do is go out there, be, you know, hustle, be active, be athletic, get in there, mix things up. Clear, as far as I'm concerned, all he needs to do is clear the way for Alex Tyus to be a baller, right? To just do some nasty stuff down low and score a lot of points, because Vernon Macklin just simply doesn't need to do that. So, anything else about the front court? I want to talk more about that small forward spot if you guys are.
Go ahead.
Have any opinions about
that? Let's do it.
All right. Dan Warner.
The great Dan Warner.
Is a 3-year starter at Florida right now. Thunder Dan Warner is a 3-year starter at Florida. This is outrageous. I can't stand for this. I don't think he's as talented as Chandler Parsons. I don't think he fits in with this lineup as well as Chandler Parsons. They say he's a great defender. Sure, you know, he can guard several different kind of guys, but he's not a good matchup one-on-one guy. He's not as good in the press as Parsons because he's not as long and he's not as athletic. I don't see where he fits in.
I'm just going to warn you now. You can take back everything you just said for his own safety. I agree with you. But Dan Warner has a dedicated following. Of blue collar,
hard working
fellows that are willing to take you out if you say a negative thing about Dan Warner. So I mean, you can take everything you said back right now, and everyone will forgive you, or just be prepared to be hated on the entire year.
Chandler Parsons has an army of sorority girls following him right now. Have you seen his hair? He's flowing.
I don't know if I have to describe it as flowing.
Okay, sure.
In sports, at a high level, it's important that you do something exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Dan Warner is mediocre at everything. Like, he's just decent at, like, quite a few things.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Right, but to the nth degree. Yeah. Like, he's
an exceptionally hard worker.
Right, but well, that doesn't translate, I'm sorry. So, we've all watched him play. Dan Warner, you could do much worse than Dan Warner as a glue bench guy who's going to come in, give you some minutes wherever you need it, kind of just plugging holes. Whoever's in foul trouble that night, he's going to come in and spell. You could do worse than Dan Warner. But for Dan Warner to be like the focal point of your team and a starter on a team that has aspirations of, you know, making the tournament, making a run in the tournament, winning the SEC, competing in the SEC, it's not good. And but at the same time, I don't think Chandler Parsons is that great either. He's so inconsistent. And he's got some maturity questions, I'm going to say, that he certainly showed in the first game. And I don't know if I feel comfortable with him out there either. So maybe Warner is the right move for now. And then if Parsons can get better, insert him. Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel good about either of those guys right now.
Maybe they just want someone who can score coming off the bench instead of Warner, who's probably not going to
play. I'm not sure Chandler could score, by
the
way. Not with any consistency.
He has the potential to score.
He's a better scoring option than Warner.
I know you hate the term he has potential, but I mean, he has more potential to score than Dan Warner.
Yeah. How about this? He has more potential to score 20 than Dan Warner, but he also has more potential to score 0 than Dan Warner, I think.
That's possible. I don't know, with the way the team is going to be run this year, with a little more run and gun, a little faster, a little more up-tempo.
Well, I want to talk about that.
Dan Warner couldn't
fit in. Dan Warner is a hard worker. He'll get down that court if that's what you ask him.
One other thing about that position, though, is that you could say, oh, it's because Warner's a senior. Warner's the leader of this team. Dan Warner is not the leader of this team. Chandler Parsons is the leader of this team. When you look at the guy who's talking in the huddle, who's getting everybody together, it's Chandler Parsons. It's not Dan Warner.
Chandler Parsons airballed a finger roll from half a foot out.
But
half a foot out. He was on top. His head hit the rim, but the ball did not.
Chandler Parsons is a 6 foot out swing man who can shoot the three, okay?
I stick to it. He was going through the lane, went up.
I don't care what happened.
Then he started thinking, what's my celebration this time? He already pointed to the crowd on one dunk. So he had to come up with something better than that. And then he realized right before he was not going to make it for the dunk, tried to switch their finger roll and it fell down.
All right,
it's all about the celebration, Kyle. You have to really think about that.
Yes, I agree with all that. I don't care, though. That doesn't excuse him from airballing the layup from 2 feet away. It's pathetic. Chandler Parsons has more embarrassing moments in his career than I think any other player I've ever seen.
The
dunk against FSU, the attempted breakaway dunk against FSU, while they were getting embarrassed on their home court by their rival, he just gets stuffed by the rim.
Yeah.
But that haunts me at night, so imagine how he feels about that.
Also airballed a free throw.
Okay, there you go. I mean, I don't know what his deal is.
I'm all for basketball, and I can hit the rim at least.
There's one other player who could factor into that position who, personally, I'm going to go ahead and say right now won't. Adam Allen.
Oh, I thought we were going a different direction. Yeah. I was going to say...
Ray?
Yeah, Ray. I think Ray can see a little time at the three.
Let's talk Adam Allen real quick, though. He's got that he's got that knee injury. The way Donovan talks about him and the way everybody else talks about him is very depressing. Like, yeah. He has no knee cartilage now, from what I can tell, so an attempted comeback for him would be very difficult. I see... like a medical hardship.
He's that guy in Peanuts with the black rain cloud following him everywhere.
He really is. Like, it's a terrible story. Like, I feel bad for him, but I think he's done. So I would not worry about him factoring in too much. And even if he did come back, he'd be so comparatively out of shape and everything. I don't think Adam Allen's coming back. But the other guy who could factor in at the three, Kyle, Ray Shipman.
Yeah, I like Ray Shipman. We already know he's a good defender, despite what anybody else has said, even if Billy Donovan has said that he's not. Ray Shipman,
he's offensive-minded last year.
Ray Shipman's definitely going to help you on defense. He does something you like. He does some things you like on offense. He can shoot the ball a little bit. He threw down a nasty dunk against the much smaller, what would you, wildly outsized,
severely
undersized
St. Leo. He jumped
like
a free throw line extended, I swear. That was an impressive dunk.
It was an impressive dunk. So he's super athletic. He'll match up against... the other team's best scorers. I think he can do a good job on them. They probably won't play man though anyway. But if that's what you ask him to do, I think he can do some things that some of the other guys can't. I think he's clearly the best and most versatile defender, even though they say Dan Werner.
Would they be better suited for man if he's on the court at the three?
I mean, yeah.
If you play Walker, Boynton, Shipman, Tyus, and Macklin, you could definitely play man.
I feel like you're a little undersized against a lot of teams with Shipman at
the three. It's college basketball. Like, there's not too many 6'9", 3 guys who are good.
It's true. It's true. I feel like Shipman could handle that. Yeah. But, I mean, the only thing you do have to worry about then is Walker being a little undersized and Boynton.
Walker's always going to be undersized.
That's the story of his life, man.
you have to pick your battles. If the other team has a big physical point guard, you couldn't do it. But if, you know, there are some smaller point guards in the league against, like, a Devin Downey type who's, you know, he's really good, but he's – Irv can match up with him. I think you could go to man against those teams.
I think you'd throw Boynton on him at that point and just have Irv guard some guy on the wing.
I mean, Irv can't guard a two. That'd be a huge problem. Not in man. Certainly not in man. No, definitely not.
Not even like a wing guy, just a shooter?
I mean, if it's a guy playing out of... If it's like a Lee Humphrey or like a Irvin Walker, where they're playing the two just to shoot, but they're small players, he could do that. But if it's like a 6'3", 6'4", guy, he's going to get to the rim. He's going to struggle with guys like that.
All right, that's a good point. Let's talk more about the defense. I've written a fair amount about the press so far. I think that's something they're going to try to do a lot. Billy Donovan forced his team to press in the exhibition opener. He said he wanted to get everybody who touched the floor in the press, even if it didn't work to their benefit, which it clearly did not for some of the guys. But I think it's something they're going to do a lot. It's something, if you're something of an underdog, you try to do more of, just to force, you know, whatever advantage you can get from a team that probably has more skill than you. So I think it's something they're going to do a lot, because they will be at something of a talent disadvantage against a lot of teams this year.
And the deeper you are, the more you can press. Yeah. And since they actually have guys who can play off the bench this year, we think they should be able to press more. And you know, if your guys get tired, you just rotate them out.
Yeah. The problem is some of those guys coming off the bench who are a little slow, like a Rod Tishman type who thinks a little too much.
A Rod Tishman type. Can we just say Rod Tishman?
6'5" Israeli point guard, perhaps.
Kyle McClanahan also falls in that category.
The man can dunk two-handed off 2 feet. He's got to be good.
Kyle McClanahan?
Yeah.
Yeah, kid's got bounce, according to Chandler Parsons. He's good, according to Chandler Parsons. But yeah, what do you see out of them in the press this year defensively? What do you expect?
I mean, I'm worried that, like, I mean, obviously the two of the people that are going to have to do it the most are Boynton and Irv, and that's where they kind of lack depth the most, is at that backcourt.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much they can run it if those two are going to be getting tired and have to come off the court a lot.
The type of press that Donovan runs is a trap. It's more like a full court trap where I've had to listen to one of my good friends scream for years. Whenever, like, they inbound the ball, if the other team feeds the ball back to whoever inbounded, they're not going to trap that guy. So it pretty much just breaks it usually. What they're trying to do is get a trap on the first guy who touches the ball, and then if not, they just pull their defenders back.
Yeah.
So they're not running like all out full court press like you see a lot of times. But that's not what they're trying to do. They're just trying to get a trap and then get back in their normal half court set. So. Just don't freak out like my friend did for 3 years. There's a strategy for what they're doing out there, And I think that's a little less tiring, the type of press that they're running, as opposed to just full-on pressure the ball all the way up the floor. Mm. So
now, I think Walker, I mean, obviously Donovan says Walker's in the best shape of his life. I think he can handle the 30 minutes a game.
Oh, yeah.
Even, you know, probably not pressing for 30 minutes a game, but he can handle 25 in the press. I think Boynton's just such a natural basketball player that he can handle it. And then, you factor in a Ray Shipman guy, you know, type in there somewhere. Maybe Chandler Parsons slides into the backcourt to play the two or something. They do have a lot of options they can roll with should that need arise. But let's talk about them offensively, I guess, a little bit more. I think Alex Tyus is primed for a breakout year this year. He'll be starting at power forward, something of a more natural position for him. I think he's going to score a lot. I think Macklin takes a lot of pressure off him. Tyus underperformed in the SEC last year just because he had to go, you know, night in, night out against the other team's toughest, biggest guy. I think Tyus has a big year this year. Kyle, you've agreed with me about that in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I like Alex Tyus. I always have since he first came here. And I just think, you know, things were rough on him last year, especially on the defensive end. He had to use a lot of energy guarding the other team's center. And this year he's not going to have to do that. And he's just going to have a lot more energy on offense to expend. And I just expect him to have a much more productive year and a much more efficient year. I think that this is almost certain. Like, I don't really see any reason why this wouldn't happen.
No, yeah.
I think it's definitely only going to help him moving to the four, where teams aren't going to be able to pick which, you know, let's put our best guy just on Alex Tyus. Like, that could happen, but they're going to have to account for one of the other big bodies that are playing with him, too.
Yeah, the team also being a little bit faster, because Macklin, you know, like I said, he's a big guy. He can run, though. Tyus, obviously, is athletic. You know, the rest of the guys, obviously, are very athletic. They can run more, and that suits Tyus very well, unless, like we saw him try to do against St. Leo, he tries to pull a Joe Kim Noah and bring the ball up the court.
Right, yeah.
I think Tyus is going to benefit hugely from that team running a little bit more, being a little more athletic. You know, Nick Calathes, as good as he was and everything, I don't think he was quite the runner that...
I want to get into this because I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there. Nick Calathes absolutely pushed the ball in every position. First of all, when have you ever watched a Florida basketball team coached by Billy Donovan that just pulled the rebound off the rim, handed it off to the point guard, and walked it up the court or jogged up the court? That's never how they've played, ever, no matter who's been on the team. Mm-hmm. Every Florida basketball team catches the rebound, pushes the ball as far as they can, and then they'll reverse to the top of the key and reset if there's nothing there. But nothing's changing in there. And Nick Calathes wasn't the fastest guy, like in a sprint. He'd lose in a sprint to whoever else is on the team. But he was certainly great with the ball in his hands. He was fast with the ball in his hands. And he pushed the ball and had just as much court vision as anybody else and ran the break really well. So I don't understand why everyone's saying this year, it's like, oh, if Calathes was just weighing down the break. I think what helps him on the break this year is that their front court is much more athletic and they can get out and run too. You got Tyus won't have to pick up every rebound. He can get out and run. Mm-hmm. You don't have Werner in the front court. So whoever's playing the five instead, Macklin or Murphy or whoever, they can get out and run. I just think Walker and Boynton are probably more athletic and faster than Walter Hodge was and can finish better. Well, not Walker, but Boynton certainly
sure can, yeah,
can take the ball to the rim better than Hodge could. So I think you have upgrades at other spots, but I don't understand how Calathes weighed them down. If Billy Donovan said something like that, I'd definitely like to question him on that, because Calathes is definitely like the prototypical guy you want running the break.
I mean, it comes down to Calathes is just a smart player, whereas Irv is an athletic player.
Right.
It all comes down to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like Calathes weighed them down. I think, you know, he didn't weigh them down by what he did. I think by him being a smart player, he realized, I can't run with these guys. I can't run with Dan Werner and Kenny Cagey. Like, I got to slow it down myself.
I mean, that might be true, but then it's a matter of the other positions changing then. You know, Irvin Walker has the ball in his hands instead of Nick Calathes, so they're going to be able to run more. I don't think that's true. If anything, I think Calathes saw over the defense better and can make better passes.
He definitely saw over the defense better. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, that's a true statement.
No,
so
yeah.
I mean, I like getting the ball out to Boynton. Boynton's going to be the best like slasher transition guy you've had here in a really long time, and he's going to be able to finish and create points in transition. But as far as like just the point guard spot or who's running the break, Calathes is probably better than whoever they're going to have running the break this year.
How do you think he compares to Corey Brewer on transitions? I mean,
I think he's going to be better. Corey Brewer was out of control all the time, like, and not in like a clowny, like, he's out of control out there. Like, he's literally out of control.
Yeah, no, I think Boynton is a better slasher to the hoop, but
right.
Like, Corey was always really good on transitions and getting out in front.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he just seemed faster than me.
Yeah, I mean, he can get out and run, but and he can finish a play. But I think Boynton can also create a play for you. He can dribble the ball a little bit on the break, not just catch it and dunk it. So I think Boynton is better in that aspect of the game. Not that he's a better player than Corey Brewer, but...
Right. Corey.
Scory Brewer.
Scory Brewer.
Defensey Brewer.
Al Scorford.
All right, one other thing just about this year that's going to be a little different. We mentioned it before, the SEC is a whole lot better than it was last year. The SEC last year was just kind of depressing. Like, nobody was quite living up to their potential. Everybody, you know, even the potential was downsized, potential was lowered. Not quite as good. I think that changes a lot this year just because of Kentucky alone almost, but then everybody else got better as well. You guys have thought about this. I have not. Where do you see – how do you see the SEC shaking down this year?
All right. Well, one thing I want to say, too, I know we talked about this on the preview – the NCAA tournament preview podcast is I haven't looked at every team's schedules, but I remember we talked about how the SEC killed themselves in their RPI because they didn't schedule anyone as a league.
Yeah.
It was like 12 Floridas. Like, they just went out and scheduled like really crappy competition in their non-conference, so their RPI was just terrible as a result. But this year, like, I know Florida beefed up there. You have to think Kentucky did with the increase in talent, and Calipari is likely to play those kind of teams. Tennessee does every year, and I'll have to look at the other teams, but you figure like a team like Mississippi State or like a Ole Miss who are on the rise would only make their schedule harder also. So assuming that all of them kind of went out and scheduled some tough non-conference games, their RPI is going to be so much better as a conference because they were below like non-BCS conferences last year in RPI. They were like the seventh RPI conference, and that's got to improve this year, which will get more teams into the tournament for them down the road.
Kentucky has Rider, Cleveland State, Stanford or Virginia, North Carolina,
nice,
UConn,
there you go,
Indiana,
nice,
Drexel.
I see Long Beach State.
Long Beach State, of course, and Louisville.
Okay, so they got. See, that's a great non-conference schedule right there. You got powerhouses from seemingly all of the major conferences, and then some nice little teams mixed in there.
Yeah,
and I think that'll probably be more. You know, that'll be more the direction the conference goes, which will help them get teams at the end of the year.
Just throwing this out there, by the way, in the last 2 years, Florida went 3-12 against top 50 RPI teams.
Yeah, that's
so. If you
good.
Think they're not trying to improve that, obviously they are with the schedule. Obviously, the SEC is with the schedule.
I think they were pleased with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Good job, guys.
Yeah, I think they're good with that. 3-12. We can build on this. But yeah, I think they're going to change that.
In
that,
the last
that explains
three
the schedule.
Years, you said, or
last
2 years
okay. since you know since the 04s left post 04 era. Whew. Yeah. All right, go ahead and talk about the SEC, how you see it shaking down. Y'all got rankings and stuff.
Want me to go?
I'm going
to
start it
off.
Yeah, you.
All right. Well, I think the East is significantly better than the West, which hurts UF. But I think they'll finish fourth. I have them fourth in the East. I have it Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida, Vanderbilt, and then Georgia, who's horrible. And we should never say Georgia for the rest of this podcast. And then the West.
Sorry.
The West, I have Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Alabama, Arkansas, LSU, and Auburn. And I know I'm higher on Ole Miss than probably anybody else's, but I'm picking them as the sleeper team in the conferences here. And I have UF finishing sixth overall, so they'll finish behind the three teams in the East plus both the Mississippi schools, in my opinion. So we'll see how it shakes down. It probably I'll be wrong somewhere, but I expect it to be pretty close to that. And I think they get at least five schools into the tournament, their top five, and possibly six. But six is going to be tough. Depends on how they play these non-conference games. But I think definitely expect five SEC teams back in the tournament this year.
It's funny because you have Florida even, you know, above where most of the preseason rankings have them. Everybody has them fifth in the East, you know, below Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt.
Right.
Which personally I don't see. Bob, go ahead and give your rankings. I'll come back around to mine.
In the East, I have the exact same thing, except I switched South Carolina and UF, with UF finishing third in the East.
Wow.
I know. I'm a little bit more optimistic than most.
Wow.
And I've got... Actually, I wanted to switch that. Sorry. I have Kentucky being the best team overall. Mississippi State is two. Tennessee is three. And then UF is the fourth overall.
Wow. That's... You really have a lot of confidence in,
Kenny
Boynton.
I had the same as your first three. I'm much higher on South Carolina. I have them as a fourth overall team, not UF. You want to weigh in on this?
I haven't thought about overall SEC rankings, but I do in the East, like Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida, Vanderbilt, and then the team that shall not be named. And then in the West, I'm pretty good with Mississippi State, Ole Miss, LSU, and then Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn. That's what I'd say. I haven't thought about it overall. I think Florida comes in somewhere in that sixth, seventh, probably ranking overall in the SEC with a chance to make it. They'll either be one of the last four in, one of the last four out of the tournament.
I agree with that.
Unless they do some ridiculous stuff in the SEC tournament, like whoever Mississippi State did last year and sneak into the tournament.
Right.
But I don't know what to expect out of that. All right, let's move on to a more segmented part of the show here. We're going to do a couple of quick things, you know, game show-esque segments. First one is called Take Your Pick. We're going to go through a couple of categories and say who we think is going to come out as the eventual winner in that. Team's leading scorer for Florida this year. Let's start with Bob.
Kenny Boyan.
Kyle. Are we not getting, like, an option?
I mean, we're just going to take
an
a
option.
Pick.
Kenny Boyan.
All right. Well, let's
give us something to pick from. I mean, that's how this is going down.
Kenny Boyan or Alex Tye?
Kenny Boyan.
All right, that's what I thought we were doing. going to foolishly...
I'll give you 13 players to choose from.
No, I don't want that. I'm going to foolishly stick with Alex Tyus.
Interesting. Alex Tyus or Kenny Boynton or anybody else on the team. Kenny Boynton finished second,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Kenny Boynton's definitely second. He's definitely Tyus first, but I'm going to pick Tyus.
Anyway. Oh, okay. It's really sticking to your guns.
Yeah, I'm going to be stubborn.
Okay, I'm going to say Kenny Boynton. I think Tyus is closer than people think, though. I think he's definitely the second leading scorer, probably by 2-3 points a game, I'll say. Team's leading rebounder. Who gets more, Dan Werner or Vernon Macklin?
Macklin. You guys know my opinion.
No, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get to that later.
I'm going Werner.
Ow!
But I don't think he's going to be the leading rebounder.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that later. So Dan Werner or Alex Tyus?
Yeah, I'll take Tyus.
You think Tyus over everybody?
Yes.
Okay, I feel the same way, but I think Macklin is second. I think Tyus, Macklin, Parsons, possibly somebody else, Werner.
All right, I'm going to make a ridiculous prediction about Macklin later.
I'm making it.
Stay tuned.
He's piggybacking off the prediction I told him I was going to make.
No, Phil's not here. Nobody is doing any piggybacking. Of the first-year players, who do you think is going to be better, Murphy or Vernon Macklin?
Macklin. Yeah, I mean, once again,
Murphy.
You'll see why I'm saying Macklin later.
Murphy, better than Macklin.
Murphy?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is better, Murphy or Hot Rod Tishman?
No, Murphy.
All right, so Murphy. All right, I'm gonna say Murphy as well. I think we can all consensus agree Kenny Boyan is the best first year player.
Yeah, by far.
By far. Who's the most likely to lose their starting job?
Good question.
Only one correct answer in this.
I'm going Macklin.
Ooh. I'm going to win.
Enjoy.
He didn't have Macklin.
I think he's bad.
Who does he lose it to? Is it Tyus or KG?
It's either gonna be KG. Or Tyus will slide down and Murphy will play the floor.
I think Billy Donovan has too much pride to do that.
I'm sticking to it.
Wow. All right. The correct answer is Dan Werner. Dan Werser.
You guys are fools. You think he has too much pride to do that? He's never going to move Dan Werner. He's his boy. Dan Werner will not lose his job no matter what.
The starting lineup last year.
No, he did. For a very, very small amount of time.
Calathes also was out of the starting lineup for a game.
Well, for a game. But Werner was out for like 5 games. I don't know.
And then came right back. Then Chandler sat his ass on the bench.
I think it's Werner possibly by like December 1st. I think Werner could be out of the starting lineup. Seriously.
You have no idea what's going on. You'll learn. You'll learn soon.
Chandler Parsons is a better player.
That doesn't matter. It's not what's important here.
You really think Vernon Macklin could lose a starting job?
Yes. I think Vernon is so bad that he could lose a starting job.
That's outrageous. You blew your outrageous guarantee earlier in the show.
I don't think this is outrageous at all.
All right, well, who's the biggest impact player off the bench then? Who do we think? I'm actually going to give a different answer than you'd think, just because I think one of them will be a starter.
I'm between two, and it's neither are Chandler Parsons. Yeah, I'm going to go with Ray Shipman.
I too am going to go with Ray Shipman. I like that pick.
I was between Shipman and Murphy.
Murphy, yeah.
I'm staying away from Parsons.
Clean sweep. I like Shipman because I think he gets a little more time. I think he can plug in there, play the two or the three. I think he can play a lot of different things, whereas Murphy is going to get put in positions where he's not as prone to be able to do, you know, what he can. He'll be put at center a lot, which he's going to get screwed having to go up in a Tyus-like situation against the other teams.
I don't think he plays as much center as you would think.
I don't know.
They got two other centers, like legitimate centers.
Well, yeah, KG and Macklin.
By body. Not necessarily by play.
Certainly not by play. Have zero legit centers by play. But I don't know. I think he'd be more inclined to like technically keep Tyus at the four when he brings in Murphy.
All right. Well, we'll see. It doesn't really matter at that point. Yeah. They're just numbers. They're going to be doing the same thing. Yeah. So
I still think Shipman has a better year. I think he's going to score more than he did last year.
I think Shipman looks good this year.
Yeah, I think we can all agree about that. And then going to the schedule here, break out the schedule, most likely to be UF's biggest win. What do we think, Bob?
I mean, I kind of am going out on a limb on this one, But I'm going to say they pull off an upset, and they beat Tennessee at Tennessee.
Ooh. Kyle?
Well, not bad, but I'm going off the basis that I think this team is not horrible, and so I'm going to pick a team that I think is the best they can beat, and I think Kentucky at home is the most likely game to be the biggest upset or the biggest win. Mm. If we're saying biggest win, it has to be a good team anyway. So we're not just going to pick a game we think they're going to win for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Kentucky at home. The other game I'm going to throw out there is FSU at home, because that may not look real great right now, but I think FSU is pretty solid this year. So if they are able to snap the streak, knock them off at home, I think that'll look good come tournament time. So I'll give you those two.
I think Kentucky at home is a possibility. They beat Kentucky at home last year, I believe. And, you know, Kentucky obviously is 100 times better than they were last year.
Right.
I think they have a little more potential to do good things. I don't think they win that game. It would obviously be the biggest win for any team in the nation to beat Kentucky. So I'm going to say that would obviously be nice. I think Xavier at home is going to be big for them right in the middle of the SEC season. They come back home after South Carolina, I think, on the road, which they will lose.
That'll be a nice win. The only problem is that Xavier is not the same Xavier exactly. And they're still a good team. They're still probably a tournament team, but Dayton's the best team in the A-10 this year. So.
It looks good on an NCAA tournament.
And it'll be a good win. It'll be a solid win.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think it's going to have to be, I'm just going after good teams here, who I think is going to be a good team they have a shot at beating.
Yeah, because I think we'd probably all agree they'll beat Syracuse in December.
I mean, I don't know if they'll beat them, but I think they're better than Syracuse.
Yeah.
I legitimately do. Syracuse is not good this year.
Yeah, because I think they will beat them, and I think that, you know, it looks good, but like you've said before, like Syracuse isn't that great this year, so it doesn't mean as much. It'll look nice, sure, but it doesn't mean that much. And on the opposite end of that spectrum, what is the most likely game to be UF's most disappointing loss?
Well, Kyle? If there's something we know about this team, is that they don't play well on the road. Sure. They do play well at home, though, which is why we picked home games. So I'm going to say they either lose at Vandy or at Arkansas. It'll be one of those games where it's just like, what did we just do here? It's a Georgia scenario from last year. Where they went to Georgia and lost, which, of course, I was there for. So we'll see. They'll lose to one of those two teams.
Bob?
I knew I should have gone first.
You deferred to me. That wasn't my fault.
You
pointed.
Now it looks like I'm piggybacking because I was planning on picking at Arkansas, and it's now...
Well, I'll take at Vandy.
Right,
you can have it at Arkansas.
I'll take Arkansas. Woo! Let's go Razorbacks.
Teamwork.
I think in no way they lose at Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's overrated once again. Ogilvy's good, sure, but I don't
the
think
top
he's...
four returning scorers back.
From a team that finished one in the SEC last year.
They were great. They were great.
Yep, best team in the SEC, Vanderbilt.
Shane Foster's still around, right?
I'm going to say it's either FSU at home or South Carolina on the road. South Carolina wouldn't be a surprise.
What? Those are, like, good teams, though.
I mean, they're disappointing, though, losing at home to FSU for the third straight year.
I mean, FSU is probably a tournament
after
team.
Every loss, though. I mean, that's no different. You want one that you shouldn't have lost to, I think.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like they should beat FSU at home, personally.
But they could lose.
They could lose every team they play.
All right, well, we disagree. Agree to disagree.
And then South Carolina on the road. I think there's no way they win that game.
I don't either, but I don't think they're expecting. I think South Carolina's better than UF, and it's on the road.
There's no way they win that game. You can't be that disappointed when you lose that game.
I still think it's disappointing.
All right.
Let's move on to do some over unders here. We'll start with regular season wins. I'm gonna set the over under at 21.5.
Huh? Good number.
It is a very good number.
It's almost like we agreed upon this number before the podcast.
Almost, Bob.
I'll take the over. 23.
Kyle.
Well, they will win exactly 21 games this year, exactly. So I'm gonna go under exactly 21.
Mm, so over, not much. Under, but not much. I'm gonna say over, but not much. They win 22. So we're on a very similar range here.
Yeah.
21 to 23. I think that's realistic by all of us. Another one. Boynton points per game. I'm gonna set it at 17.2, the number Nick Calathes averaged last year.
I'm gonna go.
God. It's such a good number.
Push.
that's impressive.
Yeah. I'm going to go narrowly under. Narrowly under.
Yeah. I'm taking under, and I think he's going to be right around 15, 16.
Yeah, I do too. 17.1 maybe.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over in the same way. I think it's like 17.4. He's not averaging 18 plus a game, but he's averaging what Calathes averaged, right? Like.
I mean, that was a pretty impressive. I think there's other people who can score. Like, not a lot of other people.
See, they thought that last year, too, though, I think.
No, nobody could score last year. Come on.
They had to expect more out of Walter Hodgson.
Yeah, remember, my gain of guarantee also implies someone else That's right. I have five people in my head on double digits.
Oh, I'm setting up Tyus for a huge fall here with what my ridiculous one will be. But I'm going slightly under. So we got two slightly unders and one slightly over.
Yeah. All right. Once again, great number.
Let's move on.
Tyus, points per game. This is your time to shine. I'm going to set it at 14.
Way over.
Way over?
Why'd you do that to me? I was thinking, he'll average about 14.
Yeah.
I'll take the under, 13.
I think he averaged 13 or so last year.
I say he's sticking right around that number.
Since I said, you know, it's going to be about a point or two difference between Boynton and Tyus, I'm going to take the over. He averages about 15 and a half per game. Feel pretty good about that.
17 to 18.
Oh, wow. All right, and then Vernon Macklin, this is an interesting one. Points per game plus rebounds per game. I'm setting it at 17.
I'm taking the over. I have to.
Kyle?
Under. Not even close.
I'm going to take the under. I think it lands somewhere around 14 or 15.
Yeah, I agree.
A very disappointing 14 or 15. Then Irving Walker, assists per game. This one is going to be a little interesting because Billy Donovan has talked repeatedly about how he thinks there's not one guy who gets a lot of assists on this team, like maybe Calathes did. I think if there is somebody, it's Irv. I'm going to set it at 6.
Bob?
6 assists per game for Irv. A lot of thinking here.
Yeah, I'll take the over. I think he'll be right around 7.
All right, way under.
Yeah,
he's going to be around 4, yeah. I think. If you go back and look, Calathes always had the ball in his hand, and he was a maestro on the break, as I tried to illustrate earlier. Torian Green, if you go and look at his career assists per game, which is the argument I always make, because no one knows this, because people like to think they know about basketball, but they don't.
Yeah.
He's at like 3.5 for his career. Torian Green. The Torian Green. The leader, the point guard of that championship team, those back-to-back championship teams, 3.5. So the system is set up for you to not have one guy with a lot of assists, and Irv will do a nice job, but he'll come in 4, 4.5, somewhere in there, I think it will be the number.
I agree. I'll take the under. What was Calathes' assist numbers last year?
Ridiculous. Yeah, 6.5, I'm
around. But still, that's Calathes. Right. I'm going to take the under for Irv. He did have 8 in the first exhibition game.
I think he had 9.
Oh, yeah, he had 9 and no turnovers. That's right.
I remember TG's being low, and that was making me waver, but for some reason I foolishly went over.
Scoring green,
yeah.
I'm going to take the under for that. Let's go to just an outrageous one. Nimrod Tishman, minutes per game. I'm going to set it at 9.5.
No!
I'll go... Over.
This is the biggest problem of all of us.
Under. Got me.
I'm going to say under. I think it's 9-ish.
Yeah, 8 maybe.
8 or 9.
I'd put him at 11.
I mean, this could be a tricky situation where, you know, they only have 4 backcourt, true backcourt players. You know, you need to have somebody to fill up the minutes. But I think Donovan, once he realizes that Nimrod Tishman is so slow in thinking and that he's not adept enough to play in the SEC, I think he moves Boynton over to the point guard. Irv plays a ton of minutes a game, and old Rod Tishman sees fewer than 9.5 minutes per game. So let's move on. Let's do our sleepers and busts this season. I feel like there is one correct answer for both. Let's see if you guys can pick them out. Bobby?
My sleeper is going to be Ray Shipman.
Yeah.
And my bust is going to be, I don't know if he can still be considered a bust because I feel as though for the last 2 years he's been a bust, but I'm going to stick with Chandler Parsons.
Hate you. All right, Kyle.
All right.
My stance on the one person you want being a bust.
All right.
And I can't do it.
I know.
I'm going to stand in line on the bust prediction. Macklin, yeah. Bust. And then
that's correct.
My sleeper, I'm going to go kind of just for the sake of being different, because I agree with what you're going to say, but I'm going to take KG for my sleeper.
Oh, nice. I'm going to say Eric Murphy. I think he's the obvious. Yeah. He's so physical down there. He's a tough guy. He's smart. He can do a lot of different things.
He's so smart.
He's very athletic. He's tough, which is something I think people expected out of Vernon Macklin. You know, expect him to just be like this really tough, like, animal down there. I think Murphy is a lot tougher than Macklin. I think he gets, like, he hustles for the rebounds. Dan Werner-esque hustle and grit in him. And then the bust.
He's a smart player.
Yeah, he's very, very cerebral. And I think the only correct bust is Vernon Macklin. That was a horn of some kind.
It was saying you got the question wrong.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think he's a bust. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be inherently disappointing, but I think he's a bust in terms of what people are expecting out of him. I think he is going to come out there. He's going to be athletic. He's going to be active. But he's not the savior. He's not anywhere remotely resembling a savior, so don't expect him to be. And then to wrap this up, final season predictions. Where does Florida end?
I thought we were doing an outrageous prediction.
That's the true wrap up.
This is the cherry on top.
Yeah, that's the cherry on top. This is sort of the.
All right, where does Florida's season end?
Yeah.
Well, that is the question, isn't it, Adam?
That is the question, Kyle.
This is something I don't have an answer to. No. It will end.
I can start if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
All right. This is pretty outrageous. Don't be fooled, though. This is not my outrageous prediction. I think it ends in a second round NCAA tournament loss. Done when? I went there.
I was thinking it.
Yeah?
But I'm gonna up you one. A Sweet 16 appearance.
Oh, no, I did.
Like I said, I'm foolishly optimistic about this team. Foolishly.
All right. They're going to get bounced in the first round.
Okay. So we all have them making the tournament.
Yeah, I'm going to have them in the tournament, foolishly, and I'm going to have them bounced in the first round.
Does anyone want to play straw man as to why they won't make the tournament?
Nope.
Nope. We're all believers in this room.
I don't know, man.
I don't know what to say here.
Yeah, because there is a lot of pessimism about the team. I think you can't really argue against that. I think a lot of people see this team as being worse than last year, possibly.
I don't see this team being much worse than it has been the last couple of years.
You don't think with the SEC being better, they struggle more?
That's the wild card to me.
Yeah, it's possible. But even with the loss of Calathes, which I don't think is addition by subtraction, mm-hmm. I think just overall they're a better team. Some of the young players have 1 year under their belt. They've got some people now to add depth to the team. I think they're just an overall better team.
Let me get this random before we finish up.
I don't want
to offend any of our listeners, but I'm going to offend some listeners right now.
Oh, no. No offense, but...
If you think that Florida is better off for not having Nick Calathes, you don't know anything about basketball. And that's fine. You can not know anything about basketball and go to the games and cheer like the Gators. But just don't talk to me about basketball because I don't want to hear it. It's absolutely ridiculous. Nick Calathes is not the type of player who is an addition by subtraction candidate. He's not a guy who goes out to get his, takes a ton of shots, makes the whole system run through him. He is a true point guard. He distributes the ball well. The only reason he scored so many points last year is because he had to, because everybody else is horrible. He's constantly looking to get other people their shots. He's a team player to the nth degree. Having him and Boynton in the backcourt would have been scary, probably one of the top backcourts in the nation. Mm-hmm. And you can think that they're going to be a better team this year than they were last year. I'm fine with that. But if you just said that the roster is not going to change at all, and I'll spot you in Nick Calathes, and you don't think that makes them a better team, you think that makes them worse, just keep your opinions to yourself. Don't write in. I don't want feedback from you. Just sit there, watch the games, cheer, go home, and defer to people who actually know what's going on out there.
To me, basically, all you're doing is you're trading Rod Tishman for Calathes. Because that's who took his spot.
Oh, yeah.
He took his scholarship.
Yeah, they went out and they got Rod.
To tell me that you'd rather have Rod Tishman
How many scholarship guys do they have? 11?
Yeah.
They get 13. So they could have had both of them.
They get 13?
Don't they?
I thought they
only get 11?
I believe it's 11, possibly 12. It's definitely not 13, right?
Either way.
Yeah, they have 13 players on the roster because they have McClanahan and Fricky as the walk-ons.
All right, let me do some research on that wall. You distract our listeners.
All right, well, the one other thing
that's
somewhat related to what you said, I'm going to stand up on my soapbox as well, just as you did before and as Bobby did about the thing with Vanderbilt. I'm going to say that even if this team is not better, which even though I've guaranteed that they will be better on here, I'm not saying is 100% going to happen, the team will be different, and that's going to be exciting. It's going to be a completely different beast, this team, than it has been the last 2 years. It's something different. It's something exciting. They're going to go out. They're going to look different. They're not going to be... is boring, I want to say. It's going to be an adventure with this team.
I don't know. I think you'll have a different lead in score a lot of the
names. Wait. It's 13. I'm a genius.
It is 13.
Because we'll go through this together. If you run through their roster from last year, okay, we got Adam Allen 1, Calathes 2, Chaney 3, Hodge 4, KG 5, Macklin 6, Parsons 7, Shipman 8, Tyus 9, Vargas 10, Walker 11, Dan Werner 12, and Jay Lucas 13.
Wow, interesting.
That's right.
Excellent work, Kyle. Excellent investigative work.
I am a sleuth, and they could have added Calathes without dropping anyone this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would have gone and got Rod.
I don't either. Okay. Yeah, I don't either. But I'm just for the sake of
being right.
Yeah, correctness.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, you're correct then, Bob. You were in the middle of something there.
don't even remember what it was.
Clearly very important.
Oh, yeah, it was Tishman or Kalathis. Clearly you want Kalathis over Tishman.
Exactly.
And also your second team, instead of having Tishman as the one of the five, it'd be Irv.
Yeah.
Obviously increasing your bench. I don't know. Kalathis is a lot better.
Yeah.
And like he said, he wasn't a selfish player. He was dishing out assists.
Yeah.
I do think that the atmosphere is a lot looser than it was in the last couple of years, but I'm not blaming that. Like, I'm not saying that is enough. That, like, that will bring more success than having Kalathis there.
I think it would have been looser regardless, because I think it would have been like, all right, the reinforcements are here finally. Like, yeah. Kenny Boynton's here. He's going to help us out. We got some good bench depth finally. So I think the attitude, I think, was going to change regardless.
The other thing is that the attitude of sort of the guys, you know, running the team, so to speak, is a little bit looser. I don't know if Kalathis would have just sort of morphed to that. But when you've got Kenny Boynton, as you know, as one of your top guys, he's got so much confidence and so much swagger about him that he changes things. Chandler Parsons has this false sense of confidence about him that really affects the team and will affect him positively, I think.
If Chandler Parsons had an introduction song, which, according to you, he will soon, because it'll be in the starting lineup.
You know what it'll be?
Turn My Swag On.
Absolutely.
Soldier Boy.
100% it will be Turn My Swag On, which has nothing on Thunderstruck for Dan Warner, which is ideal.
I'm pretty sure that went down somewhere like, Dan, what do you want your intro song to be? He's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And Chandler, of course, dude, do Thunderstruck. You're Thunder Dan. You got to do it. And it happened, and it's unfortunate.
And it's going to stick, too, until Dan Warner gets kicked out of his starting spot. And
this is an insult to Dan Marley. I want you all to know. He's on the dream team.
He was. The greatest basketball team ever assembled. All right, let's wrap this
actually,
up.
Actually, that may be a lie. I think he was on the national team in maybe 93, 94.
Christian Laettner was on the
dream
team.
I'm sorry. Dan Marley, I don't think, was actually on the dream team. But he was on the Olympic basketball team in the 90s.
96, I think he was.
I don't know. I don't know if he played in the Olympic. He may have just been on teams that played in
international competition.
Yeah, I don't know what to call it. Like the World Basketball Championships or whatever.
Of course, the old WBC. Yeah. Let's wrap this up with our outrageous guarantees, our outrageous predictions here. Something that, you know, we're not going to say it's 100% to come true, but if it's right, you know, we get a little feather in our cap. We feel pretty good about ourselves. So I'll start with mine. This is certainly outrageous. This is something only I would say. I get the feeling. I'm going to say that Chandler Parsons, soon-to-be Florida basketball starter, Chandler Parsons, will average 13 points per game and 6.5 rebounds per game.
That's almost as foolish as mine.
Almost. Parsons averaged, I think, 9 points per game last year.
What were those numbers?
13 points and 6.5 rebounds. Because he averaged, I think, 9 points per game last year and like 5.5 odd rebounds per game. There was like 6
you're
rebounds.
You're
going
to be so disappointed. At what point in the season do I need to consult you? Like 10 games in? You're going
to
be upset?
Talk to me around middle of January.
Middle of January. All right.
Or so.
I'll be there for you.
Okay. Good. I'm going to need emotional support when Parsons is undeservedly not starting for Dan Warner. Who wants to go next? Bob, I want to save yours for last. This is ridiculous. Kyle.
Okay. Well, Bob's going to be upset. All right, whatever. My prediction is going to be that Tyus and Boynton combine for 35 points a game. It's a lot of points a game. I don't feel good about it, but we're being outrageous. So 35 points a game between the two.
I wouldn't feel too bad about that. That's something.
It's a lot of points a game.
It's possible. All
right. Marley was on the 88 bronze team. We'll throw that out there now.
How old is Thunder Dan Marley?
Older than we thought.
Clearly, he's ageless. All right, Bob, go ahead and just make your unbelievable, outrageous prediction.
All right, well, I know I'm going to take a lot of crap from everybody, even more crap for what I'm about to say, because I'm backing off just a little bit. I'm going to say he's going to be around...
What?
Who's he, Bob? Who's he? Clarify.
Vernon Macklin.
Yep.
The Vernon Macklin.
Yep.
Center for the Florida Gators.
Starting University center. Of Florida Fighting Gators.
Yes. Thank you. He will be right around a double-double, either right at 10 and 10, 9.5. Everything will be over 9 points at least, but I think he'll be right around the double-double mark. And like I said, you'll be very upset because I'm back and I'll say he will have a double-double. Right, I'm just looking at previous numbers from other players.
Okay.
I think he'll be right around 9 rebounds a game.
He's going to be under 6 a game.
That's
under 6 rebounds a game.
That's your opinion. I don't respect
that
it.
That is my opinion.
But
according to, if we combine our thing, Chandler Parsons is going to out-rebound Vernon Macklin.
I would set Vernon Macklin's over-under at 6.5 for rebounds a game.
Huh.
And apparently Dan Marley, this is not Dan Marley, it's 44.
44. He can still play.
Yeah. I think he's still got it, yeah. Absolutely. All right, and to wrap this extravaganza up, we'll do our weekly Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. We'll start with our Kyle's I will start with mine. I'm going to give it to Urban Meyer for repeatedly referring to your team as 19-0. Here's the thing.
They're 19-0.
They are 9-0 this season.
You want the best part about being 19-0?
The possibility of being 20-0, Bob.
Exactly.
What I want somebody to do, some brave reporter, to go up to him and tell him that he's 19-1 since before the Ole Miss game last year. Just throw random records at him and see how he reacts to that. Because I can't handle this 19-0
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever gone 19-0? Have you?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You haven't. Let me answer that for you. No, you have not. That's exactly how Urban Meyer answered the question yesterday.
That's outrageous.
Attacking a reporter.
He's getting so defensive about
attacking Gator Country's buddy Martin.
There's nothing ho-hum about being 19-0.
Yeah, except when you win in a ho-hum manner.
You got a great life if 19-0 is ho-hum for you.
I do have a great life, Kyle.
I refuse to believe that. Your life is mediocre at best, and you know it.
That's true. Go ahead, get out your Kyle.
All right, I blew my Kyle early, if you know what I'm saying. But... I'm going to give it to all the Calathis people who think that this team's going to be better for not having Nick Calathis. I don't need to elaborate.
That's not even fans, though. That's reporters.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, no. Members of the incredibly intelligent media.
That we're a part of.
Right, yeah. Myself included.
My Kyle Jackson is going to go to Tim Tebow. For his saying that defense are doing a good job of the scheme and tendencies. And then today at the press conference, when someone asked if he's running more, I think it was Kyle that asked, if they're running more jumbo packages, he said, I don't really know our tendencies. So defenses know the tendencies. Tim Tebow, no clue what they're running.
So Vanderbilt is more familiar with Florida's offensive tendencies than Tim Tebow.
That would be correct.
Yep.
Well, that's horrifying. So enjoy that, Gators fans. Look forward to that for the rest of the year. Let's move on to our Reggies. I'm going to start mine off with an obvious candidate, the one and only David Nelson, who caught a touchdown pass and led my Gator guarantee to glory this week. It's nice to be right, I got to say, especially after I was publicly mocked and shamed for picking such a ridiculous guarantee by one guy in this room who immediately just
And
said,
it wasn't me.
One guy who I believe your reaction was just, no.
I stick to it. He wasn't supposed to catch the pass. Tim Tebow, visibly upset that he caught the pass. No one wants David Nelson to catch passes. He's very versatile. He can block, and then he can block again on the outside. He talks to the media. It
doesn't matter. David.
Occasionally, he catches passes on accident.
David Nelson does so many things that you don't even realize, Bob.
He talks to me. That's what he does.
Exactly. It's good to see a guy like that succeed and score a touchdown and match his career high with 3 receptions in a game.
Yeah, I know. Back-to-back career high.
Yeah, big weeks for David Nelson. So you get my Reggie for that, David. Kyle?
Okay, my Reggie is going to go to basketball in general. It's back,
yeah.
And I'm happy about it. Football is cool, but I hate the fact that, there's no real clear winner at the end of a football season. So I'm just glad to have college basketball back. It's going to kick off here this weekend, and I am pumped about it.
Yeah.
My Reggie, and it's not a very good Reggie, but it goes to the New York Yankees. I've been a Yankees fan since I was little. I grew up being a Yankees fan. It's tough because there's so many bandwagon fans that it's hard to see through all the garbage and find the real ones. But I'm glad they didn't disappoint me for once and ruin.
For once?
Yeah, for once.
For once?
All right, for once in the last 9 years when they go out and repeatedly spend a ridiculous amount of monies and just flounder every year.
Money.
Yeah, that's how much they're spending. It's multiple money.
All right.
And this time they actually was able to sign some people who could actually do something.
They have a lot of foreign talent. It's different kinds of money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, well, that wraps it up for this show. It's been quite the experience here, an hour and 10 minutes. It's been a while since we've gone
overtime.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've gone into overtime here, but I think it's certainly worth it. It's as exciting as college football overtime, I think, when we go into overtime on this podcast.
Absolutely.
So send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. Tell us how ridiculous you think our basketball predictions are. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. Twitter, twitter.com/alligatorsports.
We have a Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh.
We have an Alligator Sports Twitter, not Twitter.
No. Okay. Yeah, just Alligator Sports Twitter.
You knew that, right?
Yeah, no, I knew that, but no one uses it.
I gave up my haikuing a while ago.
That's true.
So.
We do have the Facebook, though.
Oh, yeah. Get on that Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I should probably tell myself to do as well. All right, that wraps it up. We'll be back probably Thursday with the preview of the South Carolina football game and a little, little breakdown of the Weber International Florida basketball exhibition game.
Should be a good one.
Weber International's,
classic rivalry.
Yeah, Weber International's tallest starter, 6'5", 170 pounds.
Big night for Vern.
Big night for Vern. Vern's going to go out and just have 20 and 10 tonight and make us
proving that I'm going to be right.
Or he'll just disprove you tonight.
Yeah.
If he has a bad game, I'm just going to chalk it up to he doesn't care about these games.
Good.
Good strat.
All right, so check back with us later in the week, and thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!